Sagar and Marshall here. Welcome back to The Realignment. Okay, everyone, it's Friday. What am I doing in your ears? The reason? Well, you've seen all of this craziness going on with GameStop and Wall Street Bets and Reddit and Robinhood. And look, we wanted to bring you an emergency podcast where we could break all of this down and help you think about what is really just a crazy moment in modern American politics and business and more. It just encapsulates everything that we think and that we talk about here. The changing nature of business and tech, the intersection of politics, now regulators are getting involved. And it's just been something that I've seen, you know, so many of you express so much interest in on my show Rising or in my, you know, Instagram and more, that I wanted to help all of you guys think about this. So we brought on a friend of our show, CNBC analyst and author of the Big Technology podcast and newsletter, Alex Kantrowitz. He's had some great takes whenever it comes to this, and he really helps sum up how we can think about this moment. The little guys on Reddit versus the Goliaths on Wall Street. Is that actually even the case? Why Robinhood has the most ad hoc moderation policies like known to man, corruption, the business elite, all of that.
And a quick thing, this is basically the Big Technology podcast week. We went on Alex's show on Wednesday. There is a link to that at the bottom in our show notes. Check it out. He's a real friend of the show. We really like speaking with him. And you all know the deal. In the bottom of the show notes, you have the link to our Substack, to our bookshop, and to our YouTube channel. Check it all out.
As always, a special thank you to the Lincoln Network for sponsoring this podcast. Let's go.
Alex Kantrowitz, welcome back to The Realignment.
It's great to be back. Last time we talked about how the market was irrational. That was the clip that you guys picked to highlight. And well, it's been an interesting couple of months since. So obviously the market has returned to rationality and everything is okay. So that's good.
Well, that's exactly right. Yeah.
This is going to be a very normal podcast. Well, this is just great to talk with you because it's basically Big Technology, your Substack, and your podcast week with us. We did an episode with your podcast on Wednesday. Now you're coming back on Friday, so it's great to have you. But the thing that everyone is obviously thinking right now is GameStop, social media, Reddit, Discord, CNBC, every single possible topic we cover on the show is brought together. And I want to bring everyone in with some really excellent tweets that you had. This should frame the discussion for what we're looking at today. So the first one is, the biggest stories in politics, tech, and finance today are all social media. That's really excellent. Then we have, Robinhood is now hated by retail investors, Wall Street hedge funds, Ted Cruz and AOC. Good luck with this one, folks. And the thing that ties all this together is Joe Biden promised unity, and here we are. Where are
America's
we, Alex?
America's brought together.
Thank you, Joe. We're
together again. All it took was a Wall Street, a Reddit subreddit driving GameStop to ridiculous heights in order to come together.
I just want to say, do you know how nice it is to have to talk about something and not use the word Trump, period? It is so beautiful how irrelevant even Biden is to this conversation. It has nothing to do with politics. So thank you, Joe. Your return to normalcy is here. Let's update everybody. Okay, so this is an emergency podcast. We want to make sure we could get you guys and help you think about what is going on. So as we stand right now, we're taping this 1:07 p.m. It is on Thursday. So the current state of affairs is that, okay, let's start at the very beginning. There's a subreddit called Wall Street Bets. That subreddit identified a bunch of short stock positions held by some major hedge funds on Wall Street, and they decided to drive the price up of that stock dramatically to enrich themselves, number one, and in order to screw over this hedge fund. That successfully happened over the last 2 days. It was really the first time that we saw these hedge funds that were a target of a social media mob, and the power of platforms like Robinhood, which is a free trading application, and other brokers like E-Trade. Okay, so that was the 48-hour kind of the David versus Goliath story. David actually won. So now Goliath has struck back. So where we are right now is that Robinhood, as of this morning, has decided to ban the ability of its users from being able to purchase GameStop stock, Nokia stock, BlackBerry stock. I believe I'm missing one, but you guys get the idea.
Probably AMC. All,
AMC, that's right. All essentially platforms like E-Trade, TD Ameritrade, Robinhood, Webull, et cetera, have effectively cut off their users from being able to purchase these stocks, citing volatility, citing risk to the market. So it's prompting a big and a major conversation, Alex. And in my view, actually, probably one of the biggest like online backlashes against something that I've seen in a really long time. And I think it's very useful to try and break down a bit, like, why is it that this has touched like so? I mean, I've been kind of into the center of the story in some ways, like from my commentary. And apparently I was the front page of, I was the number one post on Wall Street Bets yesterday, which is kind of hilarious. So my question to you is, how do you see all the different fault lines? Because as you point out, this is a social media story, no question, and we'll get to the deplatforming and so much more, but how do you see the fault lines on this between politics, tech, et cetera?
Yeah, I think that we can go through all the different stakeholders. So I think the underlying factor here, and we talked about it the last time I was on, is the fact that the interest rate is so low. Mm-hmm. And so people are trying to find places to put their money where they can actually have a return, because having it in a savings account isn't going to do the trick. I think that what people have rightly pointed out is that the professional investors have for a long time basically traded on momentum, taken companies like, and you know, Tesla is a decent example, and sent them to irrational valuations, and they've been able to make a return because the money keeps coming in.
Yeah.
And so I think that Wall Street Bets, if you think about it, is a group of people who look to make returns their way on the retail front. Mm-hmm. And if you can, let's say you make a big investment, if you can successfully swing the momentum from retail investors versus professional investors, you can make a pretty good return. And so let's say I have a position in GameStop where I'm looking for a way to make a lot of money. One way to do it is to use social media as a great way to amplify outrage.
Right.
And the GameStop situation presented the perfect opportunity, because what happened was, you know, first of all, a lot of the Redditors, they like to play video games. And they would go to GameStop when they were younger to buy games. And they found that, we're in the middle of this pandemic and where like malls are closed and people are playing games online. And so Wall Street looked at that and said, well, we don't think GameStop is a good stock. So they shorted it. Mm-hmm. And they shorted, I think, beyond even the number of outstanding shares.
130% of right. The total value of the stock. Right.
Exactly. So basically the folks in the subreddit were like, we can direct our outrage at the shorts. It's a stock that we associate with emotionally. And if we can, and again, you don't have many other good places to put your money. And if we can whip up the correct amount of outrage, we can cash in a big way and hurt the shorts.
Yeah.
And so I think that the people at the beginning of this certainly did well. If you bought GameStop at like $6 and sold it at $300 or $400, you did okay.
Did pretty well.
But it also exposes, what happened with the follow-ons, whereas like people who bought a little bit higher could end up getting hurt in a big way. Mm-hmm. And in fact, like we can get into the fact that the establishment sort of struck back at this, and what their and your monologues have been terrific on this stuff.
Thank you.
What outside of what you've said about CNBC, which we have a bone to pick about.
Alex is a CNBC contributor, just so everyone's clear.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they've done a good job with coverage this week. And, if you have an argument on that, I'm happy to field it. But basically what happened is, the people who are at the start of this obviously have done well. People like, and it's not just people on the retail side, right? It's Chamath, billionaire, Elon Musk, who helped pump this thing up.
The Winklevi.
And the Winklevi. And now things are coming down. And, and that's partially because Robinhood stopped trading on the app, and it's starting to start trading on GameStop, and it's starting to crash. But okay, I feel like I could go on for a long time explaining what happened. But like, I think what I was trying to get at in terms of the tweet that Marshall read in the beginning is that, you know, the biggest stories right now in the world are all social media stories. And if we've seen anything, it's that social media just forces the issue. And yes,
that's a good point.
It's a way where people can find out what's broken with the system, whip up outrage, and then hit the fault points. And certainly the folks at Wall Street Bets, you know, hit that fault point in a big way. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to start to deal with all the second order effects of what happened. But they certainly exposed something wrong with the system.
Yeah, there's so much good stuff there. I want to go to the outrage over what Robinhood did. And at the start of, actually, let me, the two-part question. First part is, explain Robinhood, the app, because Robinhood and the specific way it works, Sagar hinted at this with his point about how, who is the customer, all of that matters. So could you from start to basically today explain what Robinhood is, what made it unique in comparison to other investment applications or services, and why that matters for what happened with the pause on the buying? Because the key thing is, and this gets into where there's a lot of not that much gravity would operate, you can still sell. So I have a bit of a tiny position on Robinhood and GameStop, but I could sell it. I just can't buy more. So if you just get into the mechanics of Robinhood, then I'll get to my second part.
Yeah, Marshall, you got to hold that. I mean, do not sell. That's the trend right now.
Yeah,
do not
don't sell. Diamond not, hands,
I
people.
I haven't sold it.
Diamond hands.
You got to be an ape that sits on that banana, man. So what happened was, so Robinhood is an app that sort of gamifies stock trading. And what this means is that it just makes it super easy to trade. It gives you all those rewards that you would have otherwise. And the thing is that it also makes your trades lets you trade for free, you know. And what that does is it makes its money, you know, elsewhere. And that's from third parties.
Let's explain that though, because this is what I want people to take away, which is it's just like Facebook. It's like you're not a Facebook customer. People who are buying Facebook advertising are the customers. So who are Robinhood's customers?
So Robinhood's customers are, you know, essentially folks that are market makers that, you know, get that they sell data from the trades. And you know, they're folks that basically profit off of the spread of what the retail investor is buying to what the actual trade is made. So, I mean, it goes to social media. If you're not paying for the product, you are the product. And the same thing goes for this. For this trading app.
And there's a key thing here. Mm-hmm. The key thing that's very interesting, though, and this is where a lot of the fight comes from, is, and you cover the startup space, the gap between the marketing of a startup and that actual fact. So if you look at the marketing, it's power to the people.
Democratize
the big
trading.
Thing. Yeah. Right. Democratization, all this stuff. So there's a bunch of people who aren't looking at the business model, who didn't grow up in the 1990s and remembered it used to cost money to trade, and they just do it. They then don't realize that at its core level, nothing that Robinhood's doing is illegal, because at a practical level, that's their business model. They don't have to give you free things, and that's not their idea. So could you speak quickly to the gap in the public perception of Robinhood into what it actually is?
Yeah, I mean, I think that public perception has come crashing down pretty quickly now that they've halted the fact that you could buy, but it was seen by many people as a trading app for the people. Like, a lot of trading apps are difficult to use. They make you go through training before you can trade options. And Robinhood basically just lets you have at the entire stock market and lets you make some really risky bets quickly. And ultimately, like, its interests are frothy trading that go to the investors.
There you go.
I think we have to stop thinking of these companies as the for the people. Like, Facebook is not a company that's supposed to, you know, connect the world and make everybody feel better. It's an advertising company. You know, same with Google. And I think that the Robinhood thing, we can't buy this bullshit that, you know, it's going to democratize trading and, you know, let the people trade. I think that there's some real truth in the fact that its master at the end of the day is Wall Street.
So that is what brings us to where we are right now, because this is what I wanted people to understand before we got to the conversation of Robinhood has banned GME and Nokia and BlackBerry and all these other stocks. It makes perfect sense to me because I'm like, oh yeah, their biggest customers are the Wall Street firms that are getting hosed by Reddit. It's just that in the previous circumstance, there was never such a direct conflict of interest between the establishment and the user base of Robinhood itself. Now, Robinhood would be fools in order to not listen to their customers, which again are the major brokers on Wall Street. In fact, I just saw this key point, which is that Citadel, which is one of the major firms which is involved with this GameStop deal and actually infused Melvin Capital, which was one of the hedge funds that shorted that stock, actually runs many of the trades that Robinhood itself executes. So the intertwinement of that is what makes sense. And I think this is something Marshall and I were discussing a lot before this podcast, was what the outrage here seems to be, and I'll let you speak for CNBC on this one, is that there are many situations, I think we can all admit this, where billionaire investors and others go on CNBC and spout a bunch of total bullshit. And the reason that they are doing so is because they know that their position as an investor and authority and appearance on this financial network will popularize a narrative which will then lead to an increase or a decrease in the stock. Now, I think that's scummy, but whatever. There's nothing you can change about that. What I think people are outraged by is that whenever Redditors do the same thing on Wall Street Bets, then Wall Street people who do the same thing on CNBC are like, oh, hell no. And they use all the power that they possibly can. They take down Robinhood. They took down the Discord server for Wall Street Bets. They made it so that, oh, I think I'm missing a few. All E-Trade. I mean, essentially, those stocks are untradeable right now by a retail investor. But if you have a $20,000 a month Bloomberg terminal, you're all good. You can IB chat your, you know, whoever you are. Only like three people who listen to this podcast will understand that. But the real question.
Yeah, you're really getting into the fun programs here.
Right. But I'm saying, like, Alex, just get to, I think, where the intersection of the outrage over this comes from, because that is what I think is the most interesting part of the story. And I see this everywhere. Like, people who I do not listen to my show and frankly, like, don't give a shit what I mostly have to say and haven't talked to in like 10 years, like, oh my God, you know, I saw this, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, this really struck a nerve for some people. So let's just take these dynamics apart so we can help people think about it.
I mean, I think that we need to separate two things, mm-hmm. which is one, and by the way, like, you know, I'm a CNBC contributor, but I'm not speaking for the network.
Yes.
But like, listen, I think number one, there is definitely a place to be asking questions about this. Is it good? Who is it going to hurt? And I think the people that there's been outrage, number one, at the very notion of people asking whether retail investors are going to get hurt here. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very real concern. And I think that we need to talk a little bit about why our market acts this way and why there aren't alternative places for people to invest their money outside of like the stock market and Bitcoin. And those are real problems that need solving. The other issue is the actions that you mentioned in terms of Robinhood not letting people buy the stock. And in terms of Discord shutting down their server, that's bullshit. If you cannot ride this train and then all of a sudden decide to get off when it's not convenient for you.
Yes, yes.
And that's exactly what Robinhood is doing, and that's exactly what Discord is doing, and it's wrong. And people have right to be outraged by it, and that's why I was, you know, the second tweet that Marshall read, you know, the fact that I was saying that Robinhood is now hated by retail investors who can't buy any more GameStop, some hedge funds who essentially had to, you know, cover their butts by you know, taking loans in order to or taking money in order to be able to stay solvent. They're hated by AOC and Ted Cruz. I mean, what sort of company is able to bring along a coalition like that? Basically no one, maybe Facebook. But other than that, this is pretty remarkable.
Well, to build on that, though, what's different from the Facebook cases all of those power centers have the same critique. Because we've talked about this. When it's the Facebook attack, the right's pissed about censorship, the left is pissed about hate speech. But in this case, they've actually taken every other power center in the country to all agree this is bullshit. But I just want to pick up on something.
Before you go, let me just say this. Like, you know, of course, is Robinhood, you know, trying to act? And by the way, I think there's like two citadels. So I'm not, they're founded by the same person, but separate companies.
Yes.
But I think that Robinhood is in one way acting to protect the Wall Street clients that it serves. And the other way, it's trying to stop, you know, people from speculating in, because like, it's one thing if you buy GameStop at 100 and it goes down to 50. It's another thing if you buy GameStop at 1,000 and it crashes to 50, which, you know, very well can happen. So I think there might be some good motives there. But I think ultimately it's just wrong. Like, you can't do it. Like, even if you're trying to protect people there, you rode this train, you've lit this fire, and now you're all of a sudden saying, wait a second, we didn't mean this type of trading. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. So I think the outrage is merited. Sorry, Marshall, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah. No, good. It's this is, and you're a podcaster. It is so difficult to figure out how to do this over Zoom sometimes, because if we're in person, we could read vibes. So yeah, I always it's always funny. But no, so three things. Number one, it's so conventional wisdom, but I don't understand how companies that are in this space just don't realize that they need actual rules of the road that aren't in vague terms of services that clearly explain what's going on. If you look at whether that's the deplatforming of President Trump on Twitter, which, you know, in all honesty, like, I support, if you look at the Reddit stuff, the Discord stuff, the objection and the outrage usually doesn't seem to me to come from the act itself. It's in the sense that it feels like they're making it up as they go along and are making these aggressive decisions. And that's what most people are mad about. So the first point is, I just don't understand how there wasn't much more thought into how to actually articulate this, how to actually make clear to people from the start. And after this point, there really is just no more excuse for any major company, whether they're tech or otherwise, to not just say from the start is, if we have users, we need to have a clear code of conduct for how we will behave that they comprehensively understand from the start. Two, I'm really interested, Sagar, in your earlier point about how this is people rising up against the establishment, because Alex kind of hit on this. It's not quite clear what the establishment is anymore. So for example, Chamath, right? Like,
yeah,
early right. Facebook, very, very wealthy, social capital. He's not establishment, but he is establishment. He's, you know, not going on the Joe Rogan show to talk about this. He's going on CNBC. I think that says something. If you look at, you know, the Winklevite twins, right? Once again, Bitcoin, not establishment, but billionaires, establishment. Harvard, we all saw the social networks. So we get the narrative there. So this is just the perfect encapsulation of the idea that in many ways, these are, and this is the theme of the show of this week, is there are shifting coalitions. They don't always make sense. And I'd urge people not to just sum up this issue as this is a populism battle against people who have a lot of money, because there are a lot of people on a lot of different sides of this debate. And then the final thing here, and this is, Alex, what I want you to answer. I'm in a frustrated position because I am a like fintech normie. I basically don't know anything. Sagar is much more on Reddit. This is a space that you cover. So I'm just asking this from first principles. A, I get that what Robinhood did didn't feel great, but like, I don't quite know why Wall Street Bets and what they were doing was actually like a good thing, right? So I get the idea, but it's annoying that there are hedge funds, but I haven't seen anyone on that side, whether it's Chamath, Portnoy, Anthony Papiano, like actually articulate like, no, like, we should want to live in a world where this happens every other day, because that is the implication of this. Pomp had a tweet, which we could throw up there too, where he was talking about how this is bad. The decentralization revolution is coming. I'm not convinced that that's inherently a good thing. I could agree that there's a lot of unfairness. I really like Sagar's point about the gap between Reddit and CNBC, but I'm not quite convinced that the world that people who are advancing this for ideological reasons are advocating for is inherently a good thing. I have a lot of sympathy with a college kid who's stuck at home during Zoom school using money to buy stocks. I don't have as much sympathy with people who are arguing for this other decentralized end state without actually articulating why it's good for people. So what's just your broad response to that?
Yeah, let's start with the last question first. I don't think this is good. I mean, that's why I keep talking about the interest rate, because the low interest rate has created an unhealthy investment ecosystem. And we're going to see stuff like this because people can't make money in any, you know, normal or safe way. Of course, you can invest the total market, but you know, that's also volatile. And it's dangerous when a stock like GameStop will shoot up this way because that thing is going to come down. And, you know, GameStop is a company with tens of thousands of employees. And what's going to happen when it starts to crash? And, you know, it might crash beyond where it was before. You know, like I just read this great post by Ranjan Roy, who writes the margins on Substack about how people will not want to catch a falling knife. And so where does it end up in terms of like what happens with GameStop and also the investors? And I think he makes a good point that like people will get harmed here. There's a reason, and he puts this in his piece, there's a reason why Robinhood has bulletproof glass in its offices because traders kept visiting and they were afraid of their safety. And I think at this point, when something like that happens, like, you know, you address the immediate threat, but then you really need to start looking at the cause of it. And I think that's the way that they've constructed their app. And, you know, Marshall, it gets back to your first question. Why do we keep seeing this happen with tech companies? And I think the thing is, that's the whole point. It's the whole point. And it's wrong and it needs to change. And I think what we've seen over and over with companies in Silicon Valley is, you know, you see this little arrow here, the growth arrow that I have in my background for listeners. I got the stonks meme behind me.
Stonks.
It's all they care about is growth. And they pursue growth at all costs. And you can hear it in their internal communication and the way that their venture capitalists tell them to do this, right? And, you know, and it's sort of kind of like move fast and break things is kind of a perfect encapsulation of it. You ride that wave as long as you possibly can, and it might take you to the IPO and it might have some terrible consequences, but you're, you know, disrupting the stodgy incumbent and therefore you're doing good. You're democratizing finance and therefore you're doing good. And people in the tech industry, they feed themselves on this bullshit that what they're doing is right as long as they grow because their mission is true, because Robinhood is, you know, democratizing finance, because Facebook is connecting the world. And it's just not the case. It's totally detached from reality. And, you know, I've been in Silicon Valley for a while now, and I'm still waiting for the wake-up call where they say we need to start putting guardrails here. And way too often it happens when it's too late. It's much more easy to architect it in the beginning, but you're just not going to get VC or stock market level returns.
A quick follow-up on that. I'm curious what you think about this because slightly related topic is all the big content moderation debates on social media platforms. And we just saw Substack, another VC-backed company. We have a Substack, you have a Substack, actually put out proactively, hey, like we are going to hire like trust and safety people, think hard about who and how we manage content on the platform. Here is a clear articulation of our strategy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How do you think Substack is doing with navigating this debate? Because from my perspective, Substack, you know, they've raised a good amount of money, but they haven't quite hit escape velocity to the point where things are getting broken. They're still moving fast. How do you think Substack's doing with navigating the whole, we could see this coming a million miles away idea?
Well, I mean, Substack is in an interesting position because its business is going to naturally grow slower because it takes the recruitment of writers. Like a newsletter business isn't going to take off in the way because, you know, content businesses inherently grow slower. Like we talked in the last episode we did together about what a tech company is, and a tech company can sort of build a product on the internet and sell it infinitely. And it's just the question is, what's your total addressable market? So for Substack, it's much less. In terms of how many newsletter writers can quickly come on the platform versus something else.
You don't sound like you would invest in Substack if you were a VC.
Right now, no. I mean, well, first of all, I don't think venture capital is the right place for me because I find it unhealthy. And look, I have VCs on my podcast all the time and I like to talk with them. And I think there are some reasonable folks out there, but you can see like with the moves, for instance, that Andreessen Horowitz is making where they're now, you know, starting their own publication and they speak less and less to the press, you know, that they ensconce themselves in this bubble and, you know, pursue the growth. And that's sort of it. Mm-hmm. So in terms of making the bet on Substack, look, I think Substack is doing a decent job. I think they should have a policy team because they will be caught in the middle of these content moderation debates, and they should know what they're up against, because the CEO right now and the founding team are making all the content moderation choices, or they're running the content moderation effort, whatever it is. And, you know, they say they're going to stay strong and not take stuff down. But you need to know what you're up against. And so that's why I think they should build a policy team. And look, there's going to be pressure on them because this week, Twitter acquired Revue, which is another newsletter platform, a compelling newsletter platform. And, you know, myself as a Substack writer, I'm going to look at that because ultimately, if, you know, Revue can use Twitter's network to help power more subscriptions, then it's something that you need to look at as a newsletter writer, because ultimately, like, your subscribers are, you know, what you're going to live and die with. So, you know, my hope with Substack on that front is that they, you know, remain serious about it, become more structured about it, and don't cave into the pressure to compete with Revue and continue to focus on building a quality product.
Totally. I this is a useful corollary just for, you know, everybody who's like, why the hell are they talking about Substack? It's like, it's because if you're going to form a company like this, you need to know what the hell you're going to do whenever it gets big. I recently heard, it was interesting, I think it was Ben Thompson writes a techery newsletter, and he's like, look, when you're a tech company, you want to onboard humanity. It makes sense that there's going to be bad stuff on there because some of humanity is bad, really bad, in fact. Go to prison sometime. And so it's important that you have the rules set out from the top so that you don't get to these ad hoc decisions about, oh, no, we got to snap to, and, you know, to the Wall Street brethren and all that. And this comes down to content moderation. This comes down to, you know, Twitter. It's like, oh, these Antifa guys planning riots, all good. Their stuff is, you know, everywhere. Facebook, Reddit, you don't see a single call in order to do anything. And then on the Capitol riots, they're like, oh, we got to ban them, we got to deplatform, blah, blah, blah. I think most people are like, deplatform them both, but they know that doesn't happen. And then the right, you know, gets upset about the left. And, you know, anyway, this is it's an important conversation. And it gets to, again, which is that enforcement of rules, because this is what we're really talking about here. And, you know, like, I think, Alex, whenever people like me, like, make fun of CNBC, it's not that we're not, like, it's not a legitimate concern that a lot of people are going to make money, are going to lose a lot of money. I've been saying that consistently. I'm like, listen, this is speculation. If it's up to me, I'd ban all speculation. But it's more about what prompts the calls for action. So, for example, this is an example I've been keep coming back to, which is that Bill Ackman, who I want to make sure I get his bio right, of Pershing Square Capital Management, he runs a hedge fund, he went on CNBC in March, around the beginning of the pandemic, and he's like, hell is coming. You know, hell is coming. It's going to be a bloodbath and all of that. It was one of the precipitating events, in retrospect, for one of the biggest sell-offs in Wall Street history. And at the same time, Ackman is buying and betting against the market conditions that he claimed on the network. And he made $2 billion off of that bet. And I look at something like that. I'm not saying it should be illegal. You know, I don't know if there's a way that you could.
There's a First Amendment. You can't say, yeah, like, you can't go on CNBC.
I can't be like, oh, you know, ban CNBC, whatever. But I'm like, yeah, you know what? Like, it's bullshit that he gets to do that. The press, you write one article about it. That's it. And there's no call for the SEC. There's no, you know, the NASDAQ isn't like, let's ban Bill Ackman, Point Square, Pershing Square Capital from making trades on our platform. There's no call to for Bloomberg Terminal or whatever to be like, we're no longer going to allow Pershing Square Capital to coordinate trades on our platform because of clearly, like, irresponsible behavior. And it's because, like, we seem to have accepted that a certain level of, like, elite kabuki theater in finance is the highest echelons of finance is fine, but then we act as if it's unacceptable whenever average retail investors do it. And like I said, I want to make clear, like, my position is both are bad. Like, all speculation is bad. I think it should be taxed at an extraordinarily high rate, and it's, you know, criminal the amount that these people don't pay in taxes, especially in disgusting and scummy ways, like the way that Bill Ackman makes a lot of money. And I guess what I'm really getting at is that it's not that people are upset at people on CNBC for being like, this should be regulated. It probably should be regulated. There probably should be different ways in which we're going to look at this. It's like, what prompts the call? It's like, oh, Bill, he gets to go do this stuff. And everybody bats an eye. They're like, oh, it's just business as usual on Wall Street. Or, I mean, there's so many different shorts, like short runs and coordinations by hedge funds and high frequency trading and so much more that these people get away with on a daily basis. I think that's kind of where the outrage comes from. Whenever you see what's being called for regulation, what prompts the elite freak out? What prompts an SEC statement being like, we're going to look into this and more? And then what is kind of considered by the by? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, look, I think at the end of the day, you know, I think we can separate the media from you know, the elites that you talk about, right?
Totally.
Because, yeah. You know, ultimately, like CNBC had Chamath on yesterday for who knows how long. And
yeah, it was like 30 minutes. It was a great segment.
It was a long segment. He made very similar arguments to, you know, the arguments that you made in your monologue. Mm-hmm. And they didn't cut him off. And I'm sure they'll have him back. And this is after he's come and said similar things, you know, in the past. So but I think that when you talk about the system that we have, where elites are able to do this stuff without much recourse. And they don't get their app shut down, like you mentioned. They're not going to get their Bloomberg terminal shut down.
Never.
But Robinhood can get shut down. That is messed up. And so I think that, like,
Quick thing, Alex. I just want to hit here because this is where, once again, I'm looking at this as a uninformed person. They're just different, though, right? Like, I'm not trying to defend Bloomberg terminals, but the questions raised by actually democratizing the stock market, actually operationally turning the stock market, not just as a metaphor, but actually into a casino, are different than the questions raised by the existence of Bloomberg terminals. So how can we both apply the clear lack of fairness and equality in our society while also considering that the SEC obviously has a direct tie to the questions of democratized finance through apps that have gotten in a bunch of other issues from the Bloomberg question? That's what I'm just trying to understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I was watching the Chamath interview yesterday, which I thought was well done. And credit, by the way, to the host for giving him the room to talk. Like, I was thinking about, I'm a Jets fan. Sorry, I'm going to throw a football reference in there. But when the Jets beat the Patriots, I think it was the last big playoff win, Sal Palantonio got a microphone in front of Bart Scott and just said, all right, how do you feel? And he gave this legendary can't wait speech. So they're looking forward, you know, to going on to the next round, going to the Super Bowl. And Sal did basically said very little there and let Bart really issue the message. And I think that, you know, the Chamath interview was an example of that yesterday, where he basically talked about how the bigger funds have traded on momentum for a long time. And we talked a little bit last time, and I know I'm going to get hate mail again about my view on Tesla. But how, like, you know, there's an irrational valuation there, and how the market has been acting largely irrationally for a long time. And so the question is, like, you know, should that be the province just of the big companies who trade on momentum and story stocks, or should the little person be able to get in? And I think retail investors should be able to make their moves in there. I just think that, like, when we talk about regulation, like, let's find a way where that stuff becomes healthy. And let's find a way where, you know, if the retail and by the way, like, the stocks are, I mean, you know, some retail investors are going to make money on GameStop. Some hedge funds are going to lose money on GameStop. But at the end of the day, this is going to be another case where Wall Street wins and most retail investors are going to lose, because, you know, you buy it on the way up, you have to sell it at some point.
Right.
And, you know, unless you perfectly time it, you're probably, I mean, there's a good chance you'll lose. What we should be advocating for is a fair system. And I think, like, Andrew Ross Sorkin today was, like, trying to reckon with it and actually crowdsourcing ideas for how we end up with a fair system. And I think that if there is any good that this situation does, and by the way, I said earlier, social media forces the issue. Mm-hmm, if there's any good that happens right now from forcing the issue, it's that we start to look at the fundamentals that allows this to happen, that exposed what happens with the established, you know, investors and is now, like, you know, starting to be frowned upon by some when the retail investors do it, and say, how do we build this back up in a healthy way? And how do we create? I mean, what I really want to know is, how do we create an economy that's healthy, but we also have returns for people that don't need to speculate like crazy and put money in GameStop and Bitcoin after they read a few articles in the New York Times, you know, saying some guy ended up, like, paying off his mortgage after he put a couple $1,000s in.
Right.
I love that you're saying that because it actually gets back to something you hinted at earlier. When you pointed out, it's not a good thing that there's this whole part of society that basically thinks the way it could actually build wealth is just speculate. That the way you could actually build wealth is crypto. The way you could, and once again, you know, separate from like the crypto critique, it's just like the people only see of the way of making money is basically lottery tickets, hoping that you're investing in the right cryptocurrency, hoping this is the right, you know, meme stock. That's not good. And that's to your point about how, like, you know, with savings accounts not working. So I think I appreciate how you're speaking to how there's something deeper that even if Robinhood hadn't did what it did, we wouldn't actually be advancing as a society. And that gets to, once again, my critique of the decentralization, folks. And Sagar, I want you to speak to this, which is basically that there are too many people right now who are acting as if we were on a good path yesterday, as if the only answer to our problems is more decentralization, breaking down institutions and acting as if that's not going to make put people in a better place, because that is just not clear to me in any way whatsoever.
This is the ultimate question. And this is why I've always resisted decentralization. One kind of why I've reluctantly become a supporter is because I don't see the elite power structure changing in any time in the future where the Wall Street hedge fund guys will be able to do what they want. And they are not going to weaponize their power in order to shut down Robinhood or other. I don't see like a market mechanism for that in the current structure. So I'm like, okay, if there literally is no other way in order to preserve like people's ability to like chat on Discord, then I think this might have to be the only way that can be done. I think decentralization in the long run does erode society's ability in order to say politically, this is what's acceptable and this what's not. But part of the problem is that right now it's not really politics which is in the driver's seat. It's like a specific ideological groupthink which just runs most of the institutions in American life. And so when I look at things like what's happening with Robinhood, and when I look at the Discord, just total bullshit, shutting it down, I'm like, well, what other option do like people have? Like, I just don't know. And what are they supposed to do? And I'm not saying I condone their behavior. I do not condone a bunch of dudes like wildly speculating on GameStop, because I think a lot of people are actually going to lose a lot of money, especially if they went into this with options and don't even know what an option was, like calls and all of that. But they still have a right to do so. That's what you were getting to, Alex, which is that at the end of the day, like, there is a right to do something, there is a right in order to, you know, chat or whatever. Like, that does seem to be a fundamental right. I'm not saying they have a right to use Discord. Note, I did not say they have a right to use a specific app, but their ability to carry that out, I would say, is a right. And so I don't see any other way to achieve that in our current system except decentralization.
So quick thing on this, that I'll throw to you, Alex. I don't understand what people mean by decentralization in this context, because the SEC, as I understand it, they could just like not like let you trade, right? So I could create this new app where our whole pitch is maybe we launch it on the podcast. Literally no rules. It's the wild west. You're never gonna get your stock censored. You're never gonna deplatformed. It could be the most hosted on crypto nodes, on drones in Nepal, like all of the clickbait. But they could just not let you trade stocks on it, as I understand it. But that didn't happen
in this case, right? So that's the thing. The SEC didn't stop trading on this.
But I'm saying they could.
It was the NASDAQ.
What I'm saying is right. So maybe Alex, you know a little more about this than we do. When people say we just need more decentralization, do they basically just mean people should use more cryptocurrencies and bitcoins? Is that what they basically mean?
I mean, I think they mean try to build stuff on the blockchain.
Yeah.
But yes. I think Marshall, like you were on my show this past week, you both were on my show this past week. Mm-hmm. And I, at the end, was talking to you about how, you know, some people say in some ways that tech is more powerful than governments. And you very emphatically said, no, the government is more powerful. And this is a wrongheaded meme that I hear a lot. And we should be honest about where power lies. And I think what you pointed out is a great example that even, you know, in this case, it was Robinhood that stopped trading, stopped the trading. But at the end of the day, you know, it's up to government agencies in terms of whether this can go on or not. And that's why I think that, like, you know, I don't look toward decentralization as the answer. I look toward fixing the system that we have today in order to be in a better position. And that's hard. And it may never happen. And I think people might just forget about this this instant, you know, what happened this week, you know, fairly soon, given, you know, every Wednesday seems
happen.
To be
For
its own
record, I think that's absolutely crisis.
It when might happen. When the 2020s history is written, this will be the first. It's not going to happen.
Like what we are seeing, though, is we're seeing, you know, maybe a once in a century collaboration where AOC and Ted Cruz seem to agree that there should be hearings about this.
She already struck back, Alex. She already said she won't she work dunked with on Ted him Cruz because he's a murderer.
Attempted
murder.
Well, and let's get real for a second. Like, hearings also means like you spank Jack Dorsey. We spank the CEO of Robinhood. Yeah. He looks. He has his glasses and he nods very seriously.
I've always been of that view on hearings. But I will say, and maybe I'm too optimistic and I have too much faith in the system, which I admit is you know might be an issue. But all these social media hearings, almost all of them were bullshit. But they did get the momentum moving in Congress, asking, "Hey, should we do something, you know, about these companies' power?" And then the subcommittee on antitrust released a pretty good report in terms of how you might want to regulate or legislate against these companies. And now that the Democrats have the House, the Senate, and the White House, what Tommy Tuberville would call all three branches of government. we might see some action there. So, but again, like I'm not optimistic that the system changes because of this. But I am optimistic that it's gotten us all talking about the way that the intricacies of the financial system and who it's actually rewarding and who it's screwing. And I think people are going to walk out of this week with their eyes open about what's happening. And in that sense, the money spent on GameStop was money well spent.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's funny because the fundamental problem we have is, like you said, the democratic process and most ideological change and debate takes a long time. Part of the problem is, as exemplified by the orange arrow behind you in the stonks meme, is that tech moves exponentially. And so by the time that you even figure this shit out, Facebook has 2.3 billion users. You're like, what the hell am I going to do now? This is a massive platform. Robinhood is now trading like how many billions of dollars on their platform every single day. And part of the problem I think that we have is we do not know how to catch those two things up. And it's like, it's cliche. People are like, oh, well, you know, we did this in the Industrial Revolution and all that. But like, I think it's fundamentally different with tech. I just do. I mean, when you can onboard literally all of humanity or like, I mean, what percent of the U.S. population is on TikTok? What, like 60 or 70%? Something like that. It's huge. Like we barely have had the debate around TikTok. And even that, it kind of happened. It's still not banned. And everyone's just like living in this quasi space. I think this is the hardest thing about tech and about government policy, which is that because it moves so fast, we cannot even think of regulation of an app, which in the span of 1 year, you could start something in your basement right now that could have 10 million, 50 million users within a year. There's just no way mechanisms in order to regulate that. I think it's one of the biggest problems that we have right now.
Yeah, I put my realist hat back on and agree with you on this front. The tech moves super fast. I think with this Robinhood instance in specific, we can actually look at the broader financial system and ask what's not working there. You know, I think trying to solve this by like telling Robinhood it can't like, you know, show confetti when you make a trade is not going to work. But I think if we start to look at our broader financial system, we might get somewhere.
So this is where we will wrap things up. You and both of your appearances on the show have spoken to a deeper concern about the stock market and the underlying system here that's reflected in these very of the moment debates that actually mean something at a deeper level. We're not just doing this episode to get in on the GME clicks, though hopefully those are there to a certain degree. On a broader level, though, are we in a situation where we should be concerned about a stock market bubble? What's funny is you're seeing a lot of people have this new meme about how we're going to have the roaring 20s all over again, because ideally, once everyone's vaccinated, you then have things reopen again and the economy will come soaring back. We'll have a great 4 or 5 years, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think there's a strong chance that happens. But the funny thing about people using that meme is at the end of the roaring 20s, back in the 1920s, you had the Great Depression, and then which leads to World War II and the Cold War and the really shitty parts of the 20th century. So within all of that, Do you think there's something to the doom version of like the new Roaring Twenties meme, especially as we're looking at these underlying stock discussions?
Yeah. So I look at what happened with GameStop. I look at what's happening with companies like Tesla. I look at what's happening with Bitcoin, and I look at what's happening at the market overall, where literally as the pandemic hits, market goes up, you know, good chunk of the country out of work, a lot of businesses struggling. And then companies are seeing rises in their stock prices that are not commensurate with the way that they're growing in the real world. And I think about this a lot because, okay, like on one hand, like people are making money from it. And that means pension funds are going up and things like that. But on the other hand, there's no way that I think that any of this is healthy. And I mean, obviously the stock market going up is good, but the stock market detaching from reality is bad. And so I do think we're in a bubble. I don't know how long it's going to be until, you know, things calm down because, again, the interest rate is so low that the money keeps going into the markets and into Bitcoin. And it just it sometimes feels like a bit, I know this is the wrong analogy, but it feels like a bit of a Ponzi scheme to me where it's like, okay, as long as we keep paying in, you know, my money manager is going to keep giving me a dividend. As long as we keep paying in, and then what happens when that ends? Oh, wow. And of course, the government's like put like a number of, you know, they've obviously taken the interest rate down. We've had stimulus. And so we've had to take some of these measures to keep the economy healthy, especially in this really trying period. But market history just shows. I think there was a quote someone asked, you know, what's a recession? And someone answered, happens every 6 or 7 years. You know, I think eventually the bills will come due. I just don't see how this is sustainable.
On that, we definitely agree. All right, Alex, thanks for returning for the emergency pod. Really appreciate your analysis, man. It was a great conversation.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, I mean, I'm enjoying our weekly cadence here. I'll have to get you back on show next week.
Yeah, thanks for coming back. Good news, good news or bad news, there will be something that happens that intersects our DC politics and your tech stuff. So.
Yeah,
that will definitely happen.
All right, man. All right, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks again.
Hope you guys enjoyed the episode. We love doing these Friday bonuses. We really appreciate them. Let us know what you think and check all of our links at the bottom of the show notes. We will see you on Tuesday. Thanks again, Lincoln Network. We always appreciate the help.